back on Get Up, and we were able to get Vince Carter's signal back up again. Thank you for hanging in with us, my friend.
Oh, so rudely interrupted by the storm, buddy. Sorry about that, man.
Listen, over these things, we have no control. But sure. Let's talk about the Bam Adebayo block. What did you see on the play that saved game one?
First of all, Miami's known for their defense. And they're known for channeling the defender down to their shot blocker. And you see, there was the help side on both sides did not sink in. They said, our defensive shot blocker, who is averaging one block a game in the playoffs, is going to take care of it, and he did a great job. I mean, that's tough. That's epic right there.
So when you've been on with us, we've shown some of your best dunks, and everyone seems to love it. Yes. So we figured today the theme is blocks. Did you ever have a block like that one that stands out for you?
My best blocks? Well, let's go with this. 2003, I had a big-time block on my guy Jason Terry, who was taking a jump shot. I'm coming from the help side, and I go get it left-handed. Yeah, you know, I had a lot of bounce. And then, Greeny, I ended up hitting the game-winning jump shot at the elbow. Oh, right here, you see it? 1-2 to the fade.
Oh.
Winner. Yes, it was a great moment. Great night. But this is my favorite. My favorite of all time goes to my buddy, Kurt Nowitzki. I want to say this was 2014 or something. He gets his jump shot blocked, and then he felt like he could dunk him. And I saw that. I'm like, is he going to try to dunk? And you see, I get my steps together, and I swap that out of here. And this is my favorite. He looked at it in the top. I said, you try to dunk on me? He says, that was a foul. Come on, man. I love you, Dirk.
What many people have said, the casual way that you reference things you do in your career that boggle everyone else's mind is really very charming. And I think all of us appreciate it. Vince Carter, you're the best. We'll talk to you in the next couple of days. Thank you very much for being with us and for hanging in there through the weather. Meanwhile, the big man, D. Wood, is here. We have a lot more football to get to as we continue live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. And what's the menu for this hour? Glad you asked. It's time to get up with, how about them Cowboys? The new look looks a lot like the old look. That one wasn't good enough. We'll tell you what needs to change for Dallas right now. That's where we'll begin. Meanwhile, we're one game in, and already it feels like Carson Wentz is at a crossroads. There's one simple way out of trouble. Will he finally take it? And trouble for Tampa Tom. Another Hall of Famer doesn't like what his coach said. Now the coach is firing back. You need to hear it all, and you will, as we get up with you, starting right now. And we begin with must-win games this weekend. 0-2 is the most dreaded record in the NFL, and there's good reason for that. Since the current divisional alignment began in 2002, only 16 teams started 0-2 and made the playoffs. That's 7.4%. Now, it's going to change this year because there's an additional team in each conference, but that doesn't change the fact that 0-2 is a place you don't want to be. So, let's talk about teams with a lot on the line in week two. D. Wood, who do you have your eye on?
Oh, the Cleveland Browns. Listen, we already talked about coming in how Baker Mayfield's been surrounded by all these weapons from Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, and the list goes on and on. If Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns fall to 0-2, especially in the division 0-2, boy, the season could be derailed before it even starts, really.
That game is tonight. Meanwhile, Dominique, who's a team you got your eye on that doesn't need to start 0-2?
Oh, yeah, I got two teams, actually, the Colts versus the Vikings. They're playing each other. They both lost in week one. Rivers wasn't good against a team that we thought in the Jaguars weren't going to win any games. Then the Vikings secondary has had a lot of turnover at corner, and Aaron Rodgers made them pay. So these two teams are going to be playing this week, and whoever loses this team is going to be in real bad shape starting out the year 0-2. And you can't lose games like that game the Colts lost to the Jaguars, because most times you're going to be outmatched. You got to win the games that you're supposed to win, because you're going to lose a lot of those tough, those close matchups going on.
And those are teams that are both thinking Super Bowl thoughts. Lewis, who do you have your eye on?
Well, Damian Woody, I have my eye on your Cowboys. Yeah, I said your Cowboys. Because now I'll tell you what, this week against Atlanta, they better go ahead and put up a win, because next week they're going to Seattle. I mean, in 2 weeks they're going to Seattle then. And then things could get real dicey for this football team. I think we all know, look, Dallas is kind of in the same situation as Tampa Bay. It's about expectations. It's about what people were saying about them in the offseason. Remember, this offense is unstoppable. They have the best wide receiver core in the league. They have the best skill position set in the league. Well, we need to see this pretty quickly. We need to see this against the Atlanta Falcons this week. Because if not, I think conversation is going to get ramped up around this football team very quickly. Then you have the pending contract negotiation at the end of this year with Dak Prescott. You have the conversation right now about whether or not Mike McCarthy has actually put his stamp on this offense, or is this just Kellen Moore's offense? There's a lot going on here, too. And you want to talk about heat getting turned up on a football team if they go 0-2. This is the one. This is the team to watch.
I agree completely. And let's make sure everyone understands why he's referencing D. Wood in that circumstance. Lewis, you made a bold prediction last week that the Cowboys would miss the playoffs. And my big fella over here pretty much lost his mind. D. Wood, what do you have to say after week one?
Well, first of all, good morning, Lewis. You're not going to – listen, it's too early in the morning for you to be trying to come up at me and everything. I know you did Monday Night Football and all that, so you're feeling kind of swollen in the chest and everything. But let's calm down on the Cowboys. The Cowboys will be all right. I'm not picking them to go to the Super Bowl this year. I did that last year. They let me down. But to think the Cowboys not going to make the playoffs, I might need you in studio so we can have a face-to-face conversation.
Ooh.
Hey, man.
Hey.
No, wait a minute. Just a couple segments ago, you went all in on your former team, the Jets. You went all in on them. You wanted to basically just go in there and just nuke the whole play and just kind of burn it all down, start over again. And now, I just don't understand what all this defense is of the Cowboys. I like them. I like the Cowboys. When I was a kid, look, that was my team. Tony Dorsett, the whole thing, that was my team. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is – the expectations always seem to be get out of control with this football team. They just do. And there's just something about the makeup of the team that doesn't seem to consistently jive with what you see on paper. Because you're right. What you see on paper is a team that should be putting up easy. It should easy be a 4-touchdown team every week. Every week, 28 should be the minimum that this team is scoring. But then you have highlights like this where Aaron is just like bowling pinning people and throwing them around. I mean, it's like come on now. We can't always have this same conversation every offseason about this football team, and then they come out and lay an egg like they did against the Rams. I mean, it has to get better, and they need to stomp Atlanta this week. That's what they need to do. Because the next week up in Seattle, I may have gotten one wrong on that prediction as far as Seattle missing the playoffs, because Russell Wilson is not having it. He's not having any slander from anybody.
So it's just too much to ask for the Cowboys to go to the, to make the playoffs. And you're talking about, you know, these – expectation of the Cowboys. You telling me right now it's too much to ask of the Dallas Cowboys just to make the playoffs? Come on, Lou. Come on, man. Talk to me.
I didn't say it's too much to ask. I'm just saying I believe this is one of these teams where expectations far exceed what they have put on the football field time and time again in terms of results. That's what it is. And expectations gets ratcheted up with this football team like in a hurry. As soon as they drafted CeeDee Lamb, as soon as CeeDee Lamb's name was called in the draft, what started to happen? It was like, this offense all of a sudden now, this is like Kansas City of the NFC. No, I'm not saying
that. Did you hear that from me, Lewis? You didn't hear that from me.
And I just like to bring this up with you because you're my guy, though. That's why.
No, I know why you bring it up with me because of New England. You know how that whole culture is in New England, so you trying to get that dick.
Yeah.
Let me get Shefty and Nick in on this conversation as well. And Nick and the producer, I'm keeping it here because this is good stuff here. Shefty, the last time we all got yelling at each other, you jumped in and you provided a voice of sanity and calm. What is your perspective on the Cowboys, their expectations, and their week one performance?
The same thing. Again, if the offensive pass interference isn't called, they win the game. We're talking about whether the Cowboys are going to the Super Bowl. It's 1 week. Again, I know that we like to get carried away with these things, but this Dallas Cowboy football team is still a good football team. It's still going to be in the thick of it. By the way, the Eagles lost in week one. The Giants lost in week one. The Cowboys lost. The only team in that division that won a game was the Washington football team. So should we now anoint the Washington football team as Super Bowl contenders while we bury the Cowboys and Eagles?
Yes.
No, it's 1 week. It's going to calm down. It'll settle back in. Eagles are without their offensive lineman. The Cowboys had some injuries. Let's see how it fares after this. See, once Dallas plays the way it should against Atlanta, are we then going to be talking about how, now they're headed to the Super Bowl at this time next week? Maybe.
Well, let's talk about how they should. Dominique, that I think is an important point here, because we were talking, you and I, Neek, were talking this morning before the show about what they should do, why that offense doesn't look the way we all think it should. What is your perspective?
Yeah, I think Lou touched on it a little bit about people getting carried away, saying that they could be the Kansas City of the NFC. I think they actually could. The difference is Kansas City plays aggressively. They play like they have an all-star or Pro Bowl-level quarterback. They play like they have Pro Bowl-level tight ends, receivers, running backs. They play aggressively. They want to score a ton of points, and they are not playing or calling plays based on what they're seeing on the other side or necessarily based on what's on the scoreboard. They set a goal to score a ton of points and they go out and do it. And I feel like the play calling and the play design in Dallas is it treats Dak Prescott as if he's not a Pro Bowl level quarterback, as if he's some sort of game manager. They treat that offense as if those players are not as good as they are. I think they should put more complicated schemes in and take more shots and let Dak Prescott win or lose them the game. Don't try to stick around. You don't want to hang around when your offense is your best asset. You want to score. So I hope that they go out and get aggressive, take shots, and go the opposite way of what I think a lot of people suggest that they do, is just hand the ball to Zeke and back off and hope that Dak doesn't blow it. No, let Dak be Dak and let Dak blow up into the quarterback that we all see that he can be in certain moments.
I like that perspective a lot, and that's what I meant when I said the new-look Cowboys look a lot like the old-look Cowboys. And I would add, they've spent all their money on the offensive side of the ball as well. So,
exactly.
Lewis, is that a reasonable perspective in your mind, that offense is still not playing to the strength that it seems to have, and that because they never seem to score as many points as you think they should in big games? Do you think that there is something in the offensive philosophy that's causing that? Lewis Riddick.
Yeah, I think Dominic has a great point here. And I think, you know, especially when you look at how offensive play is trending, being aggressive early in football games and throwing the football early in football games and using the threat of your running game, just the threat of your running game, even if you haven't even established the run yet, is something that yields positive, explosive results early in football games. Just saw it last week in Denver with the Tennessee Titans. They have Derrick Henry. What do? They come out and first play the game, play action pass, and they put Ryan Tannehill out on the perimeter, and they wind up throwing the football. And they were having success moving it. Dallas could do the same thing with Ezekiel Elliott. If they have three wide receivers that are capable of winning their one-on-one matchups at any given moment, and they do, then go ahead and let Dak throw the football early. Let him take the defense and back it off early on and make them understand that they have to defend the entire length and width of the football field. You'll naturally create more room for Ezekiel Elliott. You'll create more doubt in the minds of the defensive players, and you probably do open up this offense to where it is a four-touchdown-a-game type of offense possibly, and then maybe you get to where you want to get to. So, yeah, I understand that philosophy. I agree with that philosophy. I'm an old-school type of guy when it comes to football, but I'm starting to see how this kind of approach really does put defenses in a bind and make things very tough, and maybe Dallas should consider that.
Yeah, listen, I mean, all we've talked about is how they don't come up big in big games. Bottom line, I don't know if week one is a big game, but it feels important. And the Rams are a good defense, but they're not the 85 Bears. You can't score 17 points in these games and expect to win. All right, let me leave it there. We never even got to the Eagles, which we will get to as we continue. And we'll get to this man coming up. He's accomplished so much already. On this day that Patrick Mahomes turns 25, is he already the best ever? At least at his age? We'll take a look and make the comparisons. And then, is Baker on borrowed time? Could he possibly end up on the bench sooner than later? You got those questions? We've got all the answers. It's Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, good quarterback matchups week two. Lewis Riddick, Jared Goff versus Carson Wentz. Who you got?
Yeah, these are two guys who I like a lot. I'm going to go with Jared Goff only because I think right now that this offense really understands how they want to play the game, which is through the running game and then to Jared Goff off of the running game with play action pass, which you've seen here over and over and over again. I think Jared is much more comfortable right now. I think he understands exactly what Sean McVay expects of him right now. That doesn't mean that Carson won't rebound, but I think I would give the nod to Jared Goff right now.
Dominique, Ravens and Texans, Lamar versus Deshaun.
I don't even need you to ask the question. It's easy. I go Lamar Jackson. And part of it is because I think Lamar is actually a better quarterback than Watson. But also, Lamar is going up against that Texans defense, and Watson is going to have to go against that Ravens defense. So I think Lamar prevails.
Lewis, Patriots, Seahawks, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson. Who you got?
Yeah, this one's easy. Look, Russ is on a mission right now. Look, Cam's own coach, Bill Belichick, said that he believes in many respects that the league and that we in the media are underrating Russell Wilson because you tell me what the flaw is in his game. He can do it all. He can absolutely do it all from the pocket, on the perimeter, total command of the offense, total command of the football team overall. He, without a doubt, is a front runner for the MVP this year.
Totally agree. And then finally tonight, Neek, who you got, Burrow or Baker?
Yeah, I'm going with Burrow. I think that Burrow has more potential to do well in this situation. I know that this team is not protecting him that well. They don't have the offensive line, but they do have quite a few playmakers. And I've seen several weeks going back to last season where I didn't think Baker was playing all that well. And I think that Stefanski probably isn't doing all he can to help Baker in these situations.
Boy, they lose an in-state rivalry game, and the reaction should be fascinating. We should point out that the backup there is Case Keenum, who worked under Kevin Stefanski in Minnesota and had a career year there across the board. His numbers were well above what they had been and have been since. Most notably, too, that was Keenum's lone appearance in the playoffs. That was the year of the Minneapolis Miracle and all that kind of stuff. So, Lou, as we look at this, I get that it's week two. But what do you think is at stake for Baker Mayfield, Lewis Riddick, and the Browns as they open again, or as they play the Bengals tonight?
Well, obviously, what you have is you have two number one overall draft picks going up against one another. One guy trying to establish himself in an organization like Cincinnati, and where they're going to give him a lot more freedom, a lot more leeway to kind of like grow into the role. But he has already shown that he has uncanny and uncommon maturity. For a guy so young, for a guy who has such limited starting experience even in college, but it's someone who they have put the entire weight of the organization on him, and he's saying, hey, bring it on. I can handle it. I have the shoulders to handle it. And it kind of is reflected in his performance, although it's just one game. With Baker, you have someone who people are all over the map with only because I think he sometimes comes off as being all over the map as far as changing what he wants his approach to be, how he wants people to look at him, and then ultimately what his performance looks like. Now, I know he has been subject to a lot of dysfunction as far as, you know, coaching staffs and the subsequent effect that has on his development. And those are things people need to keep in mind. But for him to lose this game to an in-state rival with a guy who's just making his second career start, you know, for a franchise that has been synonymous with underachieving, I think that would be not good in Cleveland, because I know the fans up there this year have been told, this is going to be a year that we're going to turn this around. Kevin Stefanski is the guy. And if Baker doesn't start playing well and they don't start winning games, it's just going to get ugly once again in Cleveland, and that's become all too common up there.
Yeah, I had Jake Trotter, who covers them, on my radio show the other day. He said exactly that. He will lose the fans if they lose this game tonight. Shefty, I'll come to you in a second, but first, Neek, you put together some tape on what the coach should have done to help Baker last week. I know you're going to defend Baker with some tape here. What have you got?
Yeah, I think Baker was not getting set up well for by Stefanski. And I think because Kitchens is gone, we assume that Stefanski would do better. But I think what Stefanski needs to remember is if you are going to set the table, go ahead and let Baker eat. So this is the first play of the game. They're running the ball quite well. They're doing that zone. It sets you up. You have set the table, so now eat. What you should do is a bootleg out of that. Play action bootleg. This goes back to last year when Stefanski was with Minnesota. Play action bootleg. Look at that vision. He's out of the pocket. He can see everything. You got your speedy receivers getting over. This is what they actually did on most of their first downs where they threw the ball. They kept Baker, who's 6 foot, in the pocket. They had these receivers running three-step drops, and Baker's looking for an open receiver over this big offensive line, and they've already set it up. The play action is there. Why not go to the play action? Why set the table if you're not going to let Baker eat? So I think Stefanski failed Baker in that moment. He failed him in some of the third down play designs also. But on first down specifically, you got to go ahead and make those easy plays. Get your short and athletic quarterback out of the pocket, especially if you're running the ball well. So I think that Stefanski is not Kitchens, so he's an upgrade. But saying that you're an upgrade over Kitchens, I don't think it's saying very much. People should expect more from Stefanski to set Baker up to do the things that Baker does well.
We'll see. And again, Shefty, I get that we're being a little bit of professional overreactors today, but I think it is reasonable to say if they lose tonight, the fans are going to lose their minds in Cleveland, understandably so. So what is your sense of the mood and the mentality in Cleveland 1 week into the season?
I'm going to go along with the hysteria on this one, because somebody in Ohio is going to go to 0-2. One of these former number one overall picks at quarterback is going to be 0-2. Now, I don't think the expectations for the Bengals are quite the same as they are for the Browns. So if the Browns go 0-2, and there already are questions about how Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. are fitting together and getting along, those questions are going to be magnified and expanded upon and scrutinized for 10 days after a loss, and it will be messy in Cleveland if the Browns lose tonight.
No, that's interesting. Go ahead.
That's a hysterical Nate, Schefter? He said he was going to go in the hysterical. That was hysterical Schefter?
I took that as a win. I think we dragged him over to our side. To be honest with you, I think we finally got him over to our side. We're professional overreactors, and we finally got Schefter to overreact. Although I'm not sure it is when it comes to the situation in Cleveland. We'll see. Meanwhile, we'll take a break. Coming up on Get Up, how was the relationship between Tampa Tom and his new coach? We'll dive in there as Bruce Arians has hearing some criticism from a totally unexpected place. And then, if Bill Belichick wants Cam Newton to make it to week three, there's something he needs to do in week two. You will hear my unsolicited advice as we continue a spirited morning on Get Up ESPN. We're back on Get Up this morning, and Bruce Arians has been critical of Tom Brady this week after Brady threw two picks and took three sacks in his Buccaneers debut. Brett Favre didn't like that. Favre, who also changed teams late in his career, questioned Arians' approach in a radio interview this week.
True or not? I think the last person you want to call out after the first game of the year is Tom Brady. Now, maybe they had a mutual truce going into the game, going into the season. Hey, you know, I'm going to be hard on you. I want the guys to know that we're going to treat you the same, even though technically I'm not. So are you okay with it? If they have that truce, great. If not, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
Barking up the wrong tree. That's what Brett Favre said yesterday. Arians was asked again about the relationship with Brady. Here's what he said.
Yeah, Tom and I are fine, so I don't really care what other people think. So it's just what he and I think. And, you know, we left the stadium fine. We showed up today fine. So there ain't nothing to talk about.
I think there is something to talk about. So let's talk about it with Jenna Lane, who covers the Buccaneers for us. Jenna, we're 1 week in, and already we have this going on. What are you seeing as you're there every day in the relationship early on between Brady and Arians?
Yeah, Greeny, I've had a lot of folks express to me concern that there could be potential friction between Tom Brady and Bruce Arians after Arians' comments post-game. I've gotten no indication of any such friction. I describe their relationship as a healthy one. I've also gotten no indication that Tom Brady wants to be handled with kid gloves. I think we all kind of tried to after the game, but he told me, hey, I've lost games before. I've got to play better. I think the difference here is the fact that everything is out in the open. Tom Brady is used to hard coaching, but he's not used to it being made so public. Bill Belichick kept everything close to the vest. But with Arians, he's already told us before, yeah, I cursed Tom Brady out for throwing the ball in a walkthrough. He's told us before, yeah, Rob Gronkowski needed to come to training camp in better shape. He's got to get in better shape. He told the media in Arizona, Calais Campbell should have had 5 sacks and not just 3. So anybody that plays for him knows that he is going to be very open and honest with the media, and he's going to tell them exactly what's on his mind. I would also say this. This is a locker room where you don't have to worry about losing the players' confidence in the quarterback. These are players that grew up with posters of Tom Brady on their walls. And so when Arians is critical of him publicly, these guys are going to step up all around him. They're going to do whatever it takes to protect him.
Jenna Lane, great to have you back this week. Thank you very much, and we'll see you after they play week two, which obviously will create a lot of conversation. And so I want to go to D. Wood, because we did touch on this a little bit earlier this morning, but without the perspective there, which I think was important, and we did not have your perspective. You played with Tom at the very beginning of his career. What do you make of this and Brett Favre jumping in the middle of it? What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, I think coaches handle quarterbacks very differently. I think Brett Favre is speaking to that, just the way that maybe how coaches and Green Bay for most of his career handled him. Anyone that's been in New England knows that Tom Brady has been in a 20-year mental meat grinder. Literally every practice, every meeting, every game, Bill Belichick puts you through the mental gymnastics that makes most players uncomfortable. And Tom has the highest expectations of himself. Now, the difference is Bruce Arians, he'll air it out to everyone to hear. But if you think that Tom Brady is going to get sensitive off of the things that Bruce Arians say to the media, then you don't know Tom Brady. This is the same guy who was a sixth-round pick, 199th pick, and still plays with a chip on his shoulder. So nothing that Bruce Arians is going to say is going to tick Tom Brady off or it's going to make him fall apart emotionally.
Okay, I like that. The counter to that, I guess, is that it was my perspective that at least one of the reasons he left New England was because he was tired of being criticized all the time by his coach, and now here he is being criticized by his coach. Lewis Riddick, let me ask you your perspective. When you hear Brett Favre say he may be barking up the wrong tree, what do you think?
Yeah, I get where Brett's coming from. And Greeny, I also get where you're coming from as far as, you know, the talk about did Tom want to go have a change at this point in time in his career because he wanted to be approached differently. He wanted to be corrected differently. He wanted to have more input on game plans. He just wanted a different feel, a different environment around him. And most people go, well, that can't be the kind of environment he wanted. He can't surely have said, I want to go down to Tampa Bay so Bruce Arians can talk to the media about how I didn't play well. I don't think that's what people had in mind, you know, for Tom Brady. And I think that's what's kind of catching us all by surprise here a little bit. Like, whoa, is this going to be sitting well with the guy who's won six Super Bowls and played nine of them? Is that the kind of change that you were looking for? But I think Damian also is on to something here, which is this is probably one of the most mentally resilient players, despite the fact that he's had so much success, one of the most mentally resilient, tough players that this game has ever seen, simply because Tom made himself into who he is. Nothing was given to him. And obviously, Bruce isn't giving him anything down there either. He's giving it to him straight and giving it to him honestly. And that's something that he has been used to his entire career. I can speak to those mental gymnastics, Woody. I remember them like they're yesterday. I haven't played pro football in a long time, almost 21 years. And I still can remember some of those meetings and some of the demands that Bill places on you like it was simply this morning, like it was just a couple hours ago. So, I mean, I get it. He's not going to crack. This is good conversation, though, as far as is this what we really expected to hear out of Bruce Arians in the relationship concerning Tom Brady? I think what we really want to see now is how's Tom going to react to this in week two? How's the team going to react to it in week two? Because that's where the conversation is going to come back to. Can he help this football team win and get them to the playoffs? Because it's either playoffs or bust with this team. It's simple as that. It's playoffs exactly. Or bust. Otherwise, was any of this worth it?
Nick.
Why you might think that maybe he doesn't want to be talked to like this by Bruce Arians, but there's a difference between the situations in New England and the situation down in Tampa. Bruce Arians may be publicly saying that he's not playing well, but Bruce Arians also has given him two Pro Bowl receivers, two Pro Bowl caliber tight ends, and a bunch of running backs. So it's a little different if someone's criticizing you on one end and also giving you everything you ever dreamed of on the other end. If you think back to how he was in New England last season, he was getting probably criticized and ripped apart in those meetings and privately, and then going out on the field and looking around and saying, but I don't got no help. So I think it's a little easier for him to be able to accept Bruce Arians' criticism. And I think he also knows, like he's tough mentally. He knows that Bruce isn't really talking to him. Bruce is talking to the rest of the team and using him to do so, because that message rings loud and clear in that locker room when he says Tom isn't doing what he has to do. It's a lot louder than if he comes out there and picks some offensive lineman or receiver and says they need to get better.
He plays his first home game this weekend, for whatever that's worth. A home means such a different thing in this era against the Panthers, as you see. Next order of business is Brady's old team, and this to me is very important. Patriots Seahawks this week, and Cam Newton going up against the Seattle defense. The Patriots called 13 designed runs for Cam last week, and he wound up rushing the ball a total of 15 times in the game. Now juxtapose that with the way Pete Carroll, the coach in Seattle, sees his own defense. He says, I love the way we were able to show first time out how we want to play. I'm glad the message was clear. We're coming to knock the hell out of you when you play us. That was fun. It did seem like a bit of a throwback, and so that got me to thinking, Bill Belichick may be the greatest coach of all time. He doesn't need advice from me, but I'm going to give it to him anyway. Here's my unsolicited advice. I've seen Jamal Adams play. I watched his entire career with the Jets, and I'm telling you right now, if you run Cam Newton 15 times this game, he won't play week three. This experiment will be over immediately. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face, and Jamal Adams is the one who does the punching. So my advice is 5 carries max for Cam this week, unless you want Jamal Adams to put a quick end to all of this success in New England. D. Wood, why are you laughing?
because we're sitting here talking about the GOAT coach and Bill Belichick, and you know, we're questioning, you know, what he.
It is unsolicited advice. What I'm saying is, I worry about Cam Newton running into Jamal Adams and that putting a very quick end to the way this.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Have you seen how big Cam Newton is?
I understand.
Jamal Adams is a hell of a player, but let me tell you something. That's a tank at quarterback for the New England Patriots. So if they collide, I guarantee he's dishing out more than he's taking.
I understand that. I guess what I'm trying to say is, with all the conversation about whether this is sustainable or not,
right?
There isn't a game that will concern me a lot more than this one, because Jamal will be coming with a full head of speed when he sees Cam. I would anticipate that being part of the defensive plan, and I would imagine Jamal Adams is looking forward.
Here's what I'll say to that, and Lewis can speak to this as well as Dominique. Patriots are a game plan specific type team.
Right.
What you saw week one might not necessarily be anything what you see in week two.
Right.
So I think a lot of people have gotten up in arms about, oh man, they ran the ball that many times. Well, if you see a weakness with an opponent, the Patriots are going to go and exploit it. I don't know what they figured their weakness, the Seattle Seahawks defense weakness is, but I guarantee you Bill Belichick will do whatever he can to exploit that weakness.
I get that, and that's true, but I wonder how much of it is about the weakness they saw in the defense and how much of it is about the weakness of their own offensive passing game, and they figure this is the best way they can go about it. Dominique, your sense of how much you expect to see Cam run the ball this week, Sunday night in Seattle.
I think the point is the Patriots aren't deciding how much Cam runs the ball. The defense is deciding how much Cam runs the ball. These are often RPOs and zone reads. So what the defense gives you, that tells you whether to throw the ball, hand the ball to the running back, or keep it. So if they're going to keep running this type of offense, they won't be able to predict or control how many attempts that Cam Newton gets. And I think it's a smart offense to run when you have the talent that they have on the offensive side of the ball. So if it just so happens that teams force Cam to carry the ball, then Cam's going to have to carry the ball. And I understand that everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. But damn, Cam Newton is a real, real big face to be punching time and time again. You might break your knuckles.
I understand that, but he has also missed a lot of time because he's gotten hit more than any quarterback in NFL history. Shefty, what is your sense? All the conversation, all the questions that came out of Foxborough after week one is, that looked great, but is it sustainable? What is your sense?
Listen, I think that they, again, to these guys' points, are going to do what works for them, find that weakness. Again, Jamal Adams has gone up against the New England Patriots 6 times in his career. He's 0-6. So the Patriots have figured out a way in the past to foil him before, and they'll be trying to do the same thing Sunday night. Cam Newton, I think, with the Patriots is somebody that they, it's a new toy. They've never had a toy like this in the last 20 years. So they're going to do things that we have not seen from this Patriots offense. They're doing things that, again, were not in the playbook. And if that means running at Jamal Adams, throwing over Jamal, I don't think they're concerned about that. I think Bill Belichick this morning said Russell Wilson is maybe the most underrated player in the game. That might be more of a concern. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, he'll figure it out. Bill Belichick will figure it out. They'll be fine on Sunday night.
You know what happened to me once when I was a kid? I got a toy and I liked it so much, I played with it so much the first day it broke. And that is my concern with what happens. Neek, go ahead. I see the look on your face. What?
I mean, you need to get some higher quality toys because Cam Newton is better than whatever rock'em sock'em garbage you was playing with. You had the little vibrating football, Matt. Like, what'd you have? You probably had a wooden horse with a string on it. That feels like a Greenies toy.
Yes, I don't know. That was a toy from 1947. I don't know how old you think I am, but I appreciate the concept.
I didn't know Greeny could break dominoes. It's unbelievable.
All right, let's get up and go. We got all kinds of news around the world of sports yesterday. It starts in Michigan. On the same day that the Big Ten announced its return, Michigan quarterback Dylan McCaffrey announced he's opting out and will seek a transfer. He fell behind as he competed for the starting quarterback job. You may know he is the little brother of Christian McCaffrey. In other news, the NCAA men's and women's basketball seasons will begin November 25th, the day before Thanksgiving. The Division I Council voted to push the start date back from the originally scheduled November 10th as one of several precautions against the spread of coronavirus. LeBron James now stands alone in all NBA recognition history, getting there unanimously yesterday. He's an all-NBA player for a record 16th time that breaks a tie that he had shared with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant, and Tim Duncan. And speaking of basketball, we have it for you tonight. Game 2, East Final, Heat, Celtics, 7 Eastern. Miami up 1-0. NBA Countdown gets our coverage started at 6 on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. Coming up, he has accomplished so much already. As Patrick Mahomes turns 25 today, is he the best ever at his age? We answer that and give you evidence. Next, Get Up on ESPN.
National Voter Registration Day is September 22nd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute, but Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
That always makes me laugh. Here is Dominique. It's Answer the Question, where normally I ask you a series of hard-hitting, provocative questions, but our producer, Dave McKinnon, says that today you want to ask me a question, so go ahead. I will cede the first question to you.
I mean, given the role that you've been on your Jets-created content, I wonder if you know what happens in 45 days.
Is that when they play Kansas City?
Patrick Mahomes, you guys got to go to Kansas City and see Patrick Mahomes. I can't wait till the Monday after that game.
You know what that game is? I'm telling you right now. So my son played AAU basketball for years. And there were some games that you're watching the layup line and you say, why are they playing this? Like, why is this game even being played? Their team is dunking in the layup line. We're 11. They're going to have to call off the press when it gets to be 20-0, because that's the rule in AAU. So I think they should have that in this game. I think
your son, in those games, he could probably look and say, there's some kids in college. Now he's like, guess what? I played against that kid in AAU. So there's that benefit. You can do the same thing.
The Jets may be at that point right now, though at least someday they'll get to say, I played against Patrick Mahomes once. All right. I have questions for you meantime. Let's talk about another future Hall of Famer. Neek, will Drew Brees start all 16 games for the Saints this year?
I don't know. I would lean towards no, because we saw late season Drew Brees, kind of weak arm Drew Brees, and we know he has a history with that shoulder injury. We saw that guy in week one. So I know they won, so we're all focused on how bad Tom Brady was, but I was not impressed with Drew Brees, and I think that Jameis Winston better be getting some reps in practice, because they were already putting those Taysom Hill trick plays in, that they putting them in week one. Those are things that we normally don't see until late in the season. So I'm concerned about Drew Brees' arm strength.
All right, I like that one. Finally, here's one more. If you're getting ready to play a game, you were a corner, who are you more worried about defending, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray?
I mean, Lamar's obviously better, but as a corner, I'm worried about Kyler Murray, because his arm is outstanding and it's terrifying, and he attacks the outside of the field. I'm looking at Lamar Jackson, and then I'm looking at the linemen and the linebackers and the safety, and I'm saying, that's your problem. He throws the tight ends. He runs zone reads. He's running around. That is your problem. I'm going to be out here with Hollywood, staying deep, make sure he don't beat me deep. But Lamar is not going to be attacking the outside of the field the same way that Kyler Murray is. Lamar is obviously an MVP and terrifying, but that ain't my problem. That's you on the inside. Y'all got to deal with them tight ends.
That's fair. And I think it's fair to say that right now. But that kid, Kyler Murray, is on the come, and they got him the best present they could possibly get him in the form of DeAndre Hopkins. Speaking of presents, happy birthday, Patrick Mahomes. He's 25 years old today. So we decided to look back at where some of the all-time great quarterbacks were on the day they turned 25. Let's start with Tom Brady. Tom Brady, when he turned 25, was also coming off his first Super Bowl title. He was the Super Bowl MVP. Those, of course, came in his first season as a starter. So that's where he was when he turned 25. How about Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning, when he turned 25, was coming off back-to-back seasons in the Pro Bowl. However, unlike the Chiefs quarterback, Peyton had yet to win a playoff game. He didn't win his first until after he was 27. Dan Marino, meanwhile, had already won an MVP by his 25th birthday. He had more Pro Bowls and more first-team All-Pros than Mahomes. But, of course, he hadn't won a Super Bowl, and as you most likely know, he never wound up winning one. Joe Montana, meanwhile, wasn't even close. When he turned 25, he was 2-6 as a starting quarterback. It was in his age 25 season that he experienced his huge breakthrough. As for Mahomes, what can you say? He's 25, and he's already done more than most players will ever dream of. He's been regular season MVP, Super Bowl MVP. He's won just under 80% of his games, including the playoffs. And perhaps most importantly, he has a 10-year contract extension worth basically $500 million. So let us ask the question this way. Is Patrick Mahomes the best we've ever seen at this stage of his career? I know that we're talking about overreactions today, and I don't want to start comparing Mahomes to Brady. And it's just not reasonable to do it. But, Lewis, considering where he is in his career, is he at the best place we've ever seen any quarterback on the day they turn 25?
Yeah, it'd be hard to argue against it, Greeny. I mean, and this is obviously, you know, an argument that you can make objective arguments in favor of other quarterbacks. And when you're talking about subjective arguments, it's just a matter of opinion. But if you really poll the people who are around him and closely working with him, they will tell you he is as unique as it gets from a physical skills perspective and just from an arm talent perspective. Okay, and I know we use that term a lot. There is nothing he can't do with his arm. There's nothing, and I mean nothing. He can throw with horsepower, he can throw with touch, he can throw it short, he can throw it deep, he can do whatever he wants. Here's the thing, that this is why people believe that Pat's upside is basically limitless. He's such a good person, and he's someone who is so dialed into making sure that everyone else gets theirs too, that everyone, not only does he want to win, everyone around him wants to win for themselves, and even more because of how he treats them. And when you have that kind of respect, and we understand that this is the ultimate team sport, you're going to win a heck of a lot more than you're going to lose, because people are going to make sure they do everything they can to see that you continue to succeed simply because of what you do for them and how you treat them. That's the secret ingredient with this young man. That's what he gets naturally, and that's why Kansas City gave him $500 million.
Shefty, you, like I, love the history of the sport. What should we be saying about Patrick Mahomes and where he is on his 25th birthday?
Well, let me say this. On his 25th birthday, has anybody other than Patrick Mahomes had a good year in 2020? He's the only guy that's enjoyed this year, right? Everything has happened for him. He's won a Super Bowl. He signed the richest contract in sports history. He got engaged. He's had a great 2020, unlike the rest of us. Okay, we'll start there. Lou said he's got limitless potential. And I think at the age of 25, you look forward and project his future. And I think his future at this point is brighter than any quarterback that has ever played the game. Now, I don't know that he's produced more than Tom Brady at this point. I don't know that he's produced more than Dan Marino at this point. But his future is brighter at this age than any quarterback who's ever played the game.
That is exactly why we wanted, I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly why we wanted to phrase the question this way when we were talking about yesterday how we wanted to do it. On the day he turns 25, we compared him to all these other guys at that stage. D. Wood, what is your perspective? Patrick Mahomes on his 25th birthday.
Greatest quarterback I've seen this early in his career. And you know, the one we talk about all the skill set that Patrick Mahomes has, the no-look passes, being able to threaten every blade of grass on the football field. But what makes his situation so special is when you can combine all the talents that he brings to the table with one of the all-time best coaches and a guy who knows how to develop coaches. We've seen Andy Reid do it in Philadelphia, and now we're seeing him do it with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. This guy has so much more left in the tank. It's just scary to think what his future is going to be.
You're exactly right. It is the perfect storm. It is everything coming together. He comes into the perfect situation for a young quarterback to be developed, and he brings everything you could ever ask for to the situation. Now, what you may have when it's all said and done is as much success as anyone ever has. Guys, awesome. Let's run the bases. Take you quickly through as baseball is heading down their stretch, and let me show you what happened in the sport yesterday. It begins with the Dodgers. They become the first team to clinch a postseason berth after their 7-5 win over the Padres last night. It's their eighth straight year in the playoffs, which is the third longest streak ever and by far the longest active streak in the sport. Yankees, meanwhile, have gotten hot. They beat the Blue Jays 13-2. They've won seven straight. They got a career-high three home runs from their backup catcher, Kyle Higashioka. The Yankees' magic number to clinch a playoff spot is now seven. They're three games behind the Rays in the division. Minnesota, meanwhile, knocked off the White Sox 5-1. They got homers from Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano, and Eddie Rosario. They could have clinched their first playoff appearance in 12 years with a win. They'll try again today in the finale of their four-game series. Meanwhile, soccer action. The 58th Bundesliga season kicks off tomorrow on ESPN with the defending Champions League champions, Bayern Munich, taking on Schalke. That's tomorrow, 2:25 Eastern on ESPN and on ESPN+. All right, First Take is coming up next. Stephen A. and Max will debate whether or not there's too much being made of the Bruce Arians comments on Tom Brady. That and more, it's 5 minutes away here on ESPN. The WNBA playoffs continue tonight on ESPN2, starting with Diana Taurasi and the Mercury taking on the Lynx. That's at 7 Eastern, and it's followed by Candace Parker and the Sparks taking on the Sun. The winners advance to the WNBA semifinals in both games on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. And before we bring in our friends Max and Molly and Stephen A., NFL weekend kicks off tonight. Cleveland, Cincinnati, big fella, who you got?
Got to go with the Browns. I just, too much talent. Can't fall to 0-2. All hell would break loose in Cleveland if they go 0-2. So I'm going to pick the Browns.
I'm almost afraid of what might happen if they lose this game. One way or another, we'll talk about it here tomorrow morning. I'll see you noon Eastern on ESPN Radio. First Take now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.